Are you thinking about starting your own cash practice? Maybe you've already started your own practice and you're starting to realize that there's a lot to learn when it comes to business. We can be great clinicians, but if we don't understand the business side of having our own practice, we're going to have a hard time being successful in business. Guys, I wrote a book for you and I took everything that I've learned over the last 5 years of running a successful cash practice here in Atlanta, and I put it in this book, and I gave you everything that you need to be able to start and scale that practice past yourself. That book is called Fuck Insurance, and if you don't like the title, the book is not for you. If you do like the title, it's the exact book that you need to be reading right now. I show you exactly how to start. I show you what's important when it comes to marketing, when it comes to sales, when it comes to operations, and what stage you're actually at in the business, you know, where you're at, what you need to focus on while you're there, and how to get to the next stage. I'm trying to set it up in a way where you can get some clarity in your business. And the book for now is 100% free. All you have to do is go to finsurancebook.com. That's finsurancebook.com and get your free copy of the book that I wrote specifically to help you be successful in business. The book is free. All you got to do is pay for it to get to your door so that I don't lose my shirt on giving everybody all these books and sending them around the world. And again, head to finsurancebook.com. Learn how to run a successful cash practice today. So here's the question. How do physical therapists like us, who don't want to see 30 patients a day, who don't want to work home health, and have real student loans, create a career and life for ourselves that we've always dreamed about? This is the question, and this podcast is the answer. My name is Danny Matei, and welcome to the PT Entrepreneur Podcast. What's going on, guys? Doc Danny here with the PT Entrepreneur Podcast, and we got my buddy Michael Lau here from the Prehab Guys. He's in town teaching a blood flow restriction course for smart tools, and so we had him over for dinner. My wife just baked us some cookies, Ashley, for the hookup. Yeah, seriously. So we made some cookies for the podcast. We had some tacos, and he's going to teach tomorrow at our facility. So, you know, we were hosting him, and we wanted to get a chance to, you know, do a podcast, chat with him a little bit. Come to find out, he's listened to podcasts for a while, so this is fun. This will be cool. And then the biggest thing, you know, that what I've taken away just in the time that we had a chance to chat is, you know, like, it's interesting how many opportunities there are out for physical therapy, you know, students, new grads, like just in general, the entire profession, but in particular, you know, people like yourself that have kind of taken a non-traditional path out of school from what we traditionally are told. And that's kind of the big thing we want to get into, because I know a lot of people listening to this podcast are students, and I'd love for you to hear a different perspective than maybe what your professors are telling you, what your senior clinicians are telling you, where they're saying, like, hold your horses, like, wait 10 years, then do something on your own. It's like, I don't think you got to do that anymore. So anyway, man, first of all, thank you so much for coming over for dinner and for, you know, deciding to pick our clinic to do the course. We're excited to have you.
Thank you for having me over for dinner.
Yeah, for sure. And you brought a bottle of wine. This guy's on another level, dude. He went to a wine shop, Ubered there, picked it up, and then came over to the house. Like, that's a baller move. So here's what I want to do. Just let's start with this, man. Let's give everybody your background, sort of, you know, from PT school to where you guys are now, and give an idea of what you guys have been working on.
Awesome. Yeah. So my name is Michael Lau. I'm a physical therapist from Los Angeles, originally from Sacramento, California, which is Northern California. Been in LA since undergrad. I went to UCLA for grad for undergrad. I went to SC for grad school. And that's where I met my business partners, Arash and Craig. We started the Prehab Guys, which is an online educational platform. I think in our second years of DPT school.
Yeah.
And then from there, it's just kind of grown. And I was kind of telling Danny earlier that I would say it will always be a very fun thing for us, but it was all just on the fun side of a hobby, I would say, probably about a year ago. And then we made the switch to really devote time to it and really put energy into it probably about a year ago, and really making that transition into a new business owner. You can say an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And actually feel comfortable saying that now.
Yeah.
As it's gone that way over the last year.
That's cool,
so,
man.
It's been fun. It's been really, really fun.
Well, you know, it's, if you think about it, right? Like, our grandparents, you know, for them to start a business is way different than for you and I.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we walk around with a computer in our pocket, which you can start a business on.
Yeah.
And for them back in the, you know, the early 1900s, you know, that's like, the Great Depression, you had a farm, maybe you had like a local store or something. Like, it's just been, it's a different time. So the ability to be an entrepreneur and go out on your own is probably easier than it's ever been. Mm-hmm. And there's all these like opportunities with technology to be able to capitalize on that. And you guys have done something interesting where basically it seems like you started out by documenting the journey of what you were learning mm-hmm. in PT school and some of the things that you were mixing in with your strength conditioning background. Does that sound about fair about what you guys did?
Yeah.
And, but then from there you are consistent, and that, like, talk about that for a second, because I think that's where people drop off when they try to do anything digitally related and content. Like, what was that like? Like, how many days in a row, how many posts do you guys do? Like, is there a consecutive streak that you've got going on?
We have never missed a single day since we started.
Wow.
Not one day.
Damn.
So we post every single day. We've gone through many iterations of how we stay accountable for it. Like, we have a calendar now.
Yeah.
The calendar even has reminders, because I'm usually the one that forgets on the day. But now we even have set days. I post every Monday and Tuesday. Rosh posts. So everyone has their day. So now we know exactly when we're going to post. But we never miss a day, and you have to be consistent. And the reason you can be consistent early on, because it's, or even now, it's fun. Mm-hmm. It's just something that we know that we're going to do. And we just told ourselves that we want to post, not for us, but for other people. There's other people out there that may need that education or want that education. And beforehand, we used to have this thing, because it's been 3.5-4 years. We're like, oh, I already posted on that like 6 months ago. But there's probably there's millions of people out there that can still benefit from the same information. Even the same person that's already heard that information can benefit by hearing it again.
Yeah.
So you don't have to feel like there's never enough. There's always enough. There's always something to share.
I think that's a challenge though, right? It's like people think, oh, well, I already talked about squat mechanics. But how about, you know, somebody like, is it Aaron, is it Harnish? Well, Squat University guy?
University, yeah.
Okay. That guy has almost 1 million followers on Instagram, and all he does is talk about the damn squat.
Yeah.
Like one movement. So if you think that, you know, you're going to run out of topics, I think this is a common, you know, fear of people are like, what am I going to say?
Yeah.
You know, and it's not just that there's other people that maybe are joining in and listening to what we have to say or watching what we have to say, but also sometimes you hear a thing, you hear the same thing, but you're ready to receive it in a different way at different
100%.
Times, you know? And I think that that's the thing that, like, for you guys, like the content you're putting out, consistency and being okay with like kind of recycling stuff, like that's just part of it, you know? And speak of this a little bit about early on with consistency, because I think this is where people drop off. They're usually good for about a month. They're super excited. And then after like month 2-3, it starts to get kind of like draining, and then they quit.
Yeah. So I would say for us, the goal, and we were in a unique situation because we were students. That's priority one. We were students first. Like that was always going to be priority one. This was something that we built on the side. So it was for us to A, educate others, B, have fun. And it was just for us really to have a good time and knowing that we would be helping people at the same time. So we didn't feel the need to have to make money or the need to have to put food on the table or the need to have to, you know, we didn't feel like we had to do anything. We did it because we wanted to do it.
Yeah.
And we knew that, you know, that was a mindset that we wanted to have with it. And that's what we've continued to do with it today. And things have changed how we may do things, but it's always because we want to do them. And as long as you want to do it, I feel like you'll never feel like you're forced to do anything. You'll never feel like you have to drop off or not post anything or whatever the daily task is, or find better ways to do that daily task that maybe you can have someone. We actually started hiring virtual assistants to do a lot of the day-to-day or copy paste. We do so much copy paste stuff on the video editing side.
Mm-hmm.
So like having people help you with those tasks to let you do the things that are more mind tasking, as you can say.
Yeah. So like low dollar stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's a whole other topic in its own right in terms of like building a team and leveraging your time and really working on the things that are, you know, the most beneficial for you guys. But, you know, even before you got to that point, it seems like, you know, you took this path that wasn't necessarily what most people do as they go through PT school. What kind of response, what kind of positive and or negative feedback did you get from like professors and other people within the profession?
So it was kind of funny. I would say maybe a month in, this is a story that we laugh about. We took our main picture. So everyone, you have to decide a picture for your social media photos.
We're like,
well, what are we going to do? Well, we were students at the time. So, let's get a picture in front of our school.
Yeah.
So it was the USC Division of Biokinesiology and Physical Therapy. The three of us is in the basement. If anyone knows the school, and we were out there taking a picture, and we got a message from SC like a month in saying that we needed to, you know, remove that photo. Or before that, they asked, what is this prehab guys thing? Is it a school sponsored project? Like for a, something we're doing in class. We're like, no, it's just something we're doing. We're trying to educate the public on what we do, what the profession's all about. It's not anything to do with, you know, anything school sponsored, but we'll say that if you guys are more comfortable with it. And they wanted us to remove the picture.
Wow.
So we removed the picture completely. They didn't want any affiliation with us. And then different professors have all been positive for the most part that we've reached out to. Because at the end of the day, we're just trying to get more eyes on the field.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter where they're coming from. We just need more eyes on that. I think everyone can agree that we need more eyes on the field.
Yeah.
We'll always need more eyes on the field.
Sure.
Doesn't matter what specialty we're talking about, but
yeah. What about clinicians?
I would say not too much. I would say there's always social media trolls, for lack of better words.
Yeah.
In person, no. Probably online, yes. And the way we've segmented thing, Arash would probably know more. Like, Arash handles the Instagram DMs.
Yeah.
So he's the one that's gonna see that, I think, more so than me on I run the emails and the website stuff. But there was definitely pushback initially for sure. And I remember actually early on, we always felt compelled, and it's so stupid, to cite something.
Mm.
Always.
Yeah.
I had to prove this. I had to cite it.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. I haven't think we've cited anything in so long. Cause it's just, but we felt compelled that we had to do that.
Yeah.
I think cause we were students, and we just felt like we needed to defend ourselves without anyone even attacking me in the first place.
Right.
I felt like I had to put that out there. And now that's just so prevalent. Social media has gone a different way.
Yeah.
Right now, in our opinion, we're on the outskirts of that. We try not to get involved with a lot of that stuff.
It's funny, man. I feel like I did the same thing as a student too. Anytime I felt challenged a little bit, you know, clinically, whether it be from a mentor or a patient or colleague, and I would be quick to cite
anything
article that was at any, like, even mediocre amount of perceived validity.
Yeah.
And I think that's normal because you get beat into your head this whole idea of, like, evidence-based practice and, you know, what's the RCT that actually, like, backs what you're doing.
Yeah.
And you know, it's interesting. I don't know how long that takes to wear off, but it definitely does. And you sort of realize, like, okay, hold on. I'm dealing with a human being that has some serious stressors going on in their life. And I need to take a step back and be able to actually, like, connect with this person and communicate with them. And that's not really something, I think that maybe they're doing a better job of that in school now, but, like, dude, I went to school in the Army's program. You got to understand, like, they weren't talking about, you know, make sure you have a positive connection with your patient.
Yeah.
They frankly don't have a choice to go anywhere else. It's a socialized medical system, right? Like, we're just hammered on all the technical skills we possibly could. But I think that's just the evolution of being a clinician. And it's funny because I think the clinical growth that's constant over and over again, you just can't become stagnant, is the same thing from a business standpoint. You know, and, like, where you're at now, you probably look back 2 years ago when you guys were going, you're probably like, damn, we're idiots. And if you don't, that means that there was any growth that happened.
Yeah.
Is there anything you look back on and you're like, man, that was dumb?
There's probably a lot of stuff. So we used to get really – so just going off of what we were just talking about, we used to get so pissed when someone would – not even challenge, just someone would just say something negative.
Yeah.
And not pissed to the point where more pissed than the point where you're just going to respond. Pissed where it's affecting my real life. Which should not happen. This is just some XYZ 2009 something. Like, I don't even know who they are.
Yeah.
And I would be pissed, you know, in real life, and then not take it out, but, you know, it affect my relationship.
Yeah.
With whoever I'm around, I'm a girlfriend. And it, maybe even the next morning I'd be pissed. And I'm like, what is going on with you? Why is this upsetting me? That took a long time, probably a year and a half to
really
just almost laugh at those things and just be like, well, this isn't my life and this is something else. Like, I'm going to separate the two.
Yeah.
Not to take it home with me. And I can understand what people want to say, but it's because I'm also saying something. So they're entitled to their opinion, but it doesn't have to affect me in the real life.
It can
just stay there.
Dude, that's so funny, man. I think that's super common though, because everybody's 10 feet tall on social media, right? Like what you said is like, well, I haven't really gotten much in-person negative feedback.
Yeah.
Well, that's because you can physically touch another human being when they're right. And the way you react is different than whenever, you know, you're online and you can just be as bold as you want. Right.
Yeah.
But, I went through something very similar and I'll tell you, the turning point for me was watching my brother-in-law, who is just he does the audio for this podcast. This is gonna be funny for when he hears this, but he is like a world-class internet troll. Like, he is on another level, man. I mean, he's been kicked off of CrossFit's platform twice.
Really?
Yes. Somehow got it back on and then kicked off again. And one time he basically put up something about like Rich Froning had retired, and he basically said like something to the effect of like, it's common for people to do this when, you know, they're going to do a cycle of steroids or something like that and then come back. And I was sitting on his couch while he was just like having the best time in the world.
Enjoying it, as all these comments
are coming in, they're like, Brandon, if I ever find you, you're in trouble. And he's just like, yeah, good luck. You know, and just laughing. Like, and he's laughing the whole time. And I'm thinking, damn, this is what happens to me if somebody says something and the person on the other end is just having the best time in the world. Yeah. And I don't want them to be able to enjoy it. So Brandon taught me a lesson of like how to deal with that stuff. And that was really helpful. How did it work out for you guys? Like when did that turning point happen?
I would say, so it was interesting. We talked to Zach Long, Barbo Physio. I don't remember his exact words, but he said he learned from Urson.
Yeah.
I remember just having a conversation, and there was just, you just have to put it away. Like it's almost what you're saying. It's going to give them benefit. It's not going to give you any benefit. It's just going to make you negative.
Yeah.
And so we still respond to them, but we respond in a way where it's a neutral response. It's like, okay, that's fine, but I'm not going to let it affect me.
Yeah.
I don't know where it came. I think it just came from getting them enough of them.
Yeah.
in just the time of seeing it. And it helps. We're in a unique situation that there's, I know your latest podcast is on partnerships. No, you didn't listen to it yet.
Yeah.
We have three of us. There is no way we would ever be where we are without three of us.
Yeah.
So if I'm pissed or if I'm happy, I can share with other people and it can diffuse situations on the negative side or can spread it around on the positive side. And it helps so much. Like I would die. If I was on my own and I was that pissed, I would have destroyed, you know, some bad stuff would have happened.
Yeah.
Because I can diffuse it, you know, amongst three people or let it out and then be okay with it that I let it out and someone heard me and listened and then it goes away and I can go on with my life.
Well, partnerships can be a really good thing. And, you know, what I see is a lot of people partner with somebody that's essentially in their skill set exactly like them. And it's probably one of the worst people to partner with because there's no offsetting skills there.
Yeah.
And when you can align people that have like at least slightly different skills or interests, and then you can take different areas of a business, then all of a sudden you can gain a lot of traction, you know? And it sounds like for you guys, that's sort of the way it is. So like what roles do each of you sort of like gravitate towards that you enjoy doing?
So I'm definitely on the website, anything related to website or external outreach. So any like business inquiries, things like that, they come in. I kind of handle the external stuff and then making sure the website's running. And now we're getting into ads and figuring out that stuff. Arash is very good with the social media stuff and the not direct, because I guess it's through social media, but the direct conversations with people.
Mm-hmm.
Really good with DMs, keeping on top of it. He does all of our finances. He's our finances guy. Craig is really also good in the external stuff. Craig eventually takes over all the external relationships. So the continuation of relationships with the external things once we've built them.
Yeah.
And he's in charge of running those. Craig's also very meticulous. So if there's things like we just launched a new shoulder program and it was our first time doing an app. And there's so much you have to learn. You have to be a meticulous person to be able to see the whole loopholes and errors and things and how you design things. So Craig's really good at that.
Cool.
And we've only learned that by working together for so long. And then now we've segmented who does what. And it's constantly kind of changing, but it's gotten better and better as we've learned.
Yeah.
Everyone kind of knows their responsibilities. And before we used to, like, I would ask. If something came in, I would ask them, hey, what do you guys think I should do? Or this is what I'm going to do. Is that okay? And that would just waste time.
Yeah.
Now we all know how we're going to think and we each individually do. And then we come back and we meet once a week or twice a week and say, this is what I did.
Yeah.
And then we share it that way.
What have you noticed with the platform that you built coming out of school in terms of opportunities that maybe presented to you versus other people in maybe even the same program that you're in? Mm-hmm. Has that been a significant advantage for you to be able to leverage, hey, I have this platform that has a decent, you know, reach, like a big reach for you to be able to say other people are interested in hiring you that maybe are not other students or like the physical product stuff that you're teaching for and all that? Like what kind of partnerships have come or opportunities have come from building this platform?
So definitely teaching. So like while we're here today, so we're teaching for Smart Tools, we teach blood flow restriction for them. And I think that definitely started as students. We actually took one of their tooling classes as students.
Mm.
we just kept the relationship going. And then it was maybe a year ago, they approached us about teaching. They actually were interested in us teaching tools at first. We said, no, that's not something we feel comfortable with, but we know exercise and we know the research. We can read the research and we felt comfortable teaching that. And kind of like I mentioned before, the first couple of times you teach, you're all over the place.
Yeah.
But then now after doing it more, it's allowed us to feel more comfortable in front of crowds. Even I'm 28, turning 29, and there are people in the courses that are, you know, much or way more experienced than me. But maybe when it comes to a subset of BFR, I've been using it for over a year and a half, or knowing what the literature is, as long as we can help disseminate that information, it doesn't matter, you know, the whole relationship. I guess I'm kind of going way off your question.
No. You're dead on, man. Like, there's the whole thing with smart tools, right? Like, if you had gone to a course, did your tooling stuff, and some just, random student, like, cool, man, thanks for the course.
Yeah.
Probably the end of it. But, you know, like, one of my mentor, Kelly Storette, always says, you know, game recognize game. Like, and if there's somebody, it's funny, man. It's like you can almost like see in certain people that there's this sort of internal confidence that is hard to build. And some of it maybe is genetic. Some of it's sort of just trained in that person, whatever it might be. But like you take that and then you stack on a distribution channel, which you guys have developed, which is a very powerful thing.
Yeah.
You can actually like influence quite a few people with different things that for to another business. I mean, that's incredibly valuable. So like you guys being able to leverage it just makes sense to me.
Yeah. Yeah. We've definitely gotten a lot of opportunities. We're very grateful for it. And you know, we discussed it amongst ourselves where we want to go. Cause there's so many things that just get thrown at, and a lot of them are very, they're bad, you know, for lack of better words. Not just bad business decisions, but just bad actual companies, you know, that we wouldn't want to do something with.
Right.
So it's all about, who you're aligning yourself with. And we understand that there is a responsibility too, because it is, like you said, it's like almost like a distribution channel. If we are going to show something, we want to make sure that we're showing it, even if we're talking about it for a different reason. I don't want that product to be a bad product or the company to be a bad company, because then that's become something that you're aligning your company with.
Yeah.
And that's super important. And we learned that very early on. Like, we don't do ads anymore. We used to very early on, we would do ads for companies. And that was just bad. We
like random
stuff, like
showcase stuff.
Like a microphone here, not relevant. Yeah. But there's this posture one. That was the first one we ever did.
Mm.
It was horrible. And we were students at the time. We were second years. You didn't really know much. And we just got so much flack for that. And now, looking at hindsight, I'm like, that I would have given myself flack for that too.
Yeah, but look, if you're a student and somebody is like, "Hey, man, I'll give you a couple $100 to like."
Yeah.
Talk about exactly. This thing.
So we said yes. And at the time, we're in school and we're learning how important it is, how important posture is. And that's all we know. So of course it aligned with what we knew at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Now when we look about it, we're like, okay, we definitely wouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
But it's a big learning curve. And for the amount of, it's a big learning decision for sure.
Are you guys actively and in a really efficient way, able to move people from the channel of Instagram over to any other channel to where, like, for instance, building an email list, another distribution channel that you just own, right? Because we all know what happened with Facebook a few years back where they just basically all of a sudden just turned everybody's organic reach off. And it's already happening on Instagram.
It's definitely happening on Instagram.
So how's that strategy look for you guys? Like, have you already started making those steps towards, I guess, insulating the audience that you've built?
Yeah. So we understand that Instagram and all social media, it's there and then it's gone.
Right.
The only quote unquote social media that lasts forever is like YouTube, I think,
and
podcasts.
Yeah.
They're the only things that are there and that are like continually there and easy to find.
Yeah.
You post on Instagram, it disappears. Post an Instagram story, it disappears. Facebook, all those things disappear. So we realize that. And we know the one thing that also stays is your website.
Hmm.
Your website is your, so we don't have a brick and mortar. We don't have a business. So we realize that our website is our brick and mortar.
Yeah.
That's by far where we devoted almost every money we made has gone towards the website. We've redesigned it 3 times in the last year and a half, with this last one being by far the best one. By far, it was the biggest expense, by far the biggest expense we've had. At the time, we were like, I don't know if that's something we could do. Now we're like, I don't know what we were doing for the last 2 years without putting that money towards
it.
Because that is our business.
Have you noticed a big, like, tangible return on investment?
Tangible return on investment.
Cool.
Because the website is where people are going to be searching things on Google. We're getting all this organic Google search. That's where you're going to collect emails. You're not going to collect emails through Instagram. You're not going to collect the emails through social media. And the email marketing is also where we've started maybe the last 6 months. We've always collected just because we knew we should over the last 3 years, but never did anything with emails.
Right.
And now we're actually doing things with emails, and we see huge spikes and jumps or sales with email marketing, which is something that's been crazy. Never really thought anything of it until maybe we started having programs, because for the most part, we weren't selling anything until about 6 months ago.
Yeah.
It was just collect, mm-hmm. grow. So now we're, like I said, we're phasing into that business side, and it's been really fun to learn all this stuff. Everything that people have said or that we've heard, we're now seeing, oh yeah, you're right, emails work.
Yeah. No, they and to some degree, what's nice about them too is that you can then take those emails and you can segment them and be able to have, like, mm-hmm. you know, conversations with people based on topics that they've expressed interest in, but also take that audience and then use it to build lookalike audiences in social media platforms to then find more people like that. And it's one of those things that's very accurate, like shockingly and almost like, you know, invasion of your privacy accurate. Yeah. Like I told my brother, we saw them at a family reunion in New Jersey like last month. And I was talking to him about advertising, and I said, look, I know where you live. I know what you're interested in. I know your age. And I bet I could put a picture in front of you on Facebook of me flicking you off saying, I told you so, like tomorrow if I wanted to.
Yeah.
And I haven't done it. I really do want to, though, just so Sam can see that it's very possible. And that's what you can do. But if you don't know who your target audience is, like if you don't know who it is that you actually have as somebody that will buy something from you, and that's really important. There's a difference between somebody that's sort of like interested in your stuff and is sort of a lurker, and somebody that's actually going to be able to allow you to make what you're doing a business.
Correct.
You know, and you know, have a livelihood based off of that. That's a different thing. So mm-hmm. what you guys have done, I think, is really interesting, is you built a ton of pressure. Like you have years of content, you know, publication, building this email list, and then all of a sudden, boom, like 6 months ago, you have something to release, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if a ton of people bought it, because mm-hmm. they just know you, and they've gotten to like you and trust you guys. And then all of a sudden you have something for them to like reciprocate on that.
Yeah.
And there it is. Now, what I will say, and this would be interesting to see like over the next year, how this goes for you guys. Usually that first pressure buildup, as soon as you've released it and you have this initial thing, then you'll see this dip. Mm-hmm. And that's when like you start scratching your heads and people start like wondering, what the hell is this, like a one-time thing?
Yeah.
And that's when things like, you know, digital advertising that can be automated but also tracked, and you understand what your return on investment is to drive that business. Oh, yeah. That's where it comes from. So it sounds like you guys are sort of at that point right now.
That's the stage we're at right now. Mm-hmm. We're just getting in. Lucky for me, good friend of mine and my roommate who's above me is in digital advertising.
Cool.
So he's helping us. We started that about 3 months ago. We're running it on our first products. So the ones that we released 6-8 months ago.
Yeah.
And as you release new ones, we still want to play with the organic reach and see how it goes, and then what we learn from that, we make it the launch better.
Yeah.
And then we're running ads to all this stuff. Eventually, though, running ads to stuff as we launch is the next step, which should happen soon.
Yeah.
But it's so crazy, like to see what you can target on Facebook and to see what Facebook knows about all of us.
Oh yeah. They're probably listening to us right now. Honestly, highly likely.
Yeah, I got a Sonos system with Alexa 2 days ago for Amazon Prime.
Mm.
It wasn't working because it was skipping out. So I was searching on Google, you know, Sonos system skipping. I know for a fact I never searched Wi-Fi. And I was at work, and at lunch, the office manager came in, and she asked me, like, you know, how's my day? I said, oh, Sonos system skipping. I think it's the Wi-Fi. And we talked about it. Right on Bleacher Report, all these Wi-Fi connectivity things. I was like, all right.
Oh, it's happening. Yeah. It's totally happening. We play this game where we'll just like say like somebody's name that's maybe like, you know, in a sales and marketing or whatever. Like I'll say, Grant Cardone. And then on Instagram, I'll just see like all these rigging sponsorship ads from Grant Cardone, or on Facebook, or anywhere we go. And I mean, it's creepy. But, you know, I guess you can take it one of two ways. You can either get like angry about it, and you can throw your phone in the water, and then put like a tinfoil hat on and just like hope nobody, you know, hears anything you have to say. Or if you're in business like us, you can say, all right, well, cool, it's happening. What are the rules of the game? Exactly. They're changing. Like, how can we utilize this in an advantage? And not only that, but like, we sell things that actually help people.
Exactly.
Like, I have no problem with that.
Yeah.
You know, and you guys probably get all this feedback from people you've never actually touched. They're like, holy crap, my shoulder feels better. And that's amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing knowing that someone in India, who I'm never probably going to meet, says his shoulder feels way better or his hips feeling way looser after doing the stretch for the last 2 days.
Yeah.
He posted with no intention of, you know, targeting someone in India, just posting it to post it because it's something that I told my patient that day.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that was a really good cue. I should go make a video on that.
Yeah.
Could help someone. What do you know? It helps a ton of people and people are appreciative. And it's amazing that you can touch that many people through social media.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm pretty fortunate. I see 2 patients an hour, but I can double book. So I'm seeing on average maybe 13 to 15 patients a day. Mm-hmm. And I'm very fortunate for that. I love working with people. I love being there in the clinic and, you know, it's going to sound cliche, changing lives in the clinic. But with social media, I can touch an unlimited amount of people.
Yeah.
It's a different way of touching them for
right.
sure. But I know it can help people.
In a totally non-creepy way. You're touching a lot.
Touching a lot.
Touching a lot of people. But, you know, the thing is, man, I think that there's something to be said for a digital element, but also that I see a lot of people that want to just 100% move away from the clinic, and not usually like right out of school. Usually it's, you know, a little bit further along and they get a little bit burned out. Part of it is some of it is all they're doing is just super high volume stuff.
Yeah.
But when you get a chance to do a little bit of both, it just makes it makes it more entertaining. It makes it better. You're not, you know, it's not as monotonous. Yeah. And that one-on-one interaction, like there's no need for me to be in the clinic anymore. Like with our staff and everything, like they're better clinicians than me. You know, their schedules are based off of really like volume that they see and the way that they're paid. So it's really probably better for me not to, but I like it so much.
Yeah.
I still have a day and a half where I go in and I work with patients because I like people.
Yeah.
And when you're doing a digital business, the thing that people don't understand, they hear this sexy shit about like laptop lifestyle, but
dude,
no, it's not laptop lifestyle. It's like sitting at your coffee table lifestyle by yourself.
Yeah.
Looking outside, wishing that you could walk your dog another time because you're just like grinding away at this task that is just time consuming and you're tied to this, you know, computer or your phone or whatever it might be. And yeah, it's, you can do it from anywhere, but still there's something to be said about that in, you know, in-person connection, you know, and
huge.
I think it's, and you also like you grow as a clinician there much faster than digitally.
Much, much faster.
Yeah.
You see the things right away. You see the mistakes that you're making or you see the positive influence that you're making.
Yeah.
The decisions that you're making, your language, there's no backspace. I said that. Oh, I said that. How do I then work and think right on the spot?
Yeah.
And maybe change that because I can't backspace something or delete something that
yeah.
I can on social media where I said something wrong. I said something wrong. I got to be able to change it right then and there.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but like no one's ever given you a hug and brought in a cake for you.
Exactly.
On Instagram.
Yeah.
As cool as they'd be like, hey, my shoulder feels better. That would be amazing.
Be amazing.
Like if they sent you like a cake. But that happens, man. Like, you know, I mean, it happened recently to us. One of our patients is she's a pastry chef and she's awesome. She's like my favorite patient. Every time she comes in, she brings something amazing.
Nice.
And like that, but also like you get looped into the community and you get to meet people. And then like, I can't go to a festival in Atlanta without running into somebody that I've worked with over the last 5 years. So like, at least for me, I don't know about you, but like I grew up in the military. We moved every 2 years. I don't have deep roots anywhere. So like, this is the place where I know more people than anywhere else in the world. I'm not even from here.
Yeah.
And so like that's special to me. And that doesn't happen necessarily like, you know, remotely. But that being said, if you guys notice that like these connections you can build digitally, it's interesting when you do get in person with somebody, it's kind of weird in a cool way. Like, have you had any strange fanboy, fangirl moments where they're like, oh shit, it's a prehab guy.
This Tuesday.
Yeah.
So I work in a gym. So it's a really unique setting where our clinic is, it's a 2-person clinic. Well, multiple chain clinic, but my location is only 3 therapists. Now we just brought someone on, a small room, but the whole gym is available to us. So I'm mainly out in the gym with my patients. I'm out there and I see this guy doing all these shoulder ISOs against the wall, which not many people in the gym do. And I'm like, huh, that's like interesting. He's doing them for a long time. I call it 15, 20 minutes. I'm like,
oh wow.
It's a long time of doing ISOs. He must be really in pain or like, I'm not sure what's going on.
Yeah.
And then later on, he comes up to me. He's like, hey, man, I actually just bought your program. I'm on phase one, day one. I didn't realize you work here. Like, can I get an evaluation? I was like, oh, yeah, sure. I was like, he's telling me all of these doing. Like, based on what you're doing, you know, you can start much higher. But, of course, you wouldn't have that information on an online product. The online product starts week 1, day 1, and it's meant to work with people in pain. So starting with a long duration and shoulder ISOs, and that's what I thought it was funny. And, but, yeah, he's like, I bought your program.
That's funny.
And he was there at the gym doing them. And I just thought it was so weird because I literally saw him like, what is he doing?
Man, what about students? Like, what do students, when you get to, you know, meet or interact with their students at conference, whatever it might be, like, is there a weird sort of like they feel like they know you moment at all?
Definitely. I remember being at CSM last year. Yeah, Arash and I at CSM last year. And it was almost like, it took me back really because we weren't out in the public in that community where people would know. It's like, I don't randomly just get stopped when I'm at a bar or at
sure.
like Ralph's or something like that.
Yeah.
So that was my first time really in the PT space where people were like giving double takes. And that was very interesting. And I guess very humbling almost.
Yeah.
That people have taken notice, you know, for whatever reason, however it's helped them or not helped them, or for what people have taken notice. And I guess it meant a lot. Yeah.
What about taking a picture with you? When's the first time that's happened?
I think it happened at CSM. It was all CSM. That was just super. I was like, oh, what's going on?
Super weird, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah. Like, I don't know you, but cool also. But yeah, it was just weird. More weird than anything.
Yeah. It's like, it's, and when I was talking about this with Shante Cofield, AKA the Movement Maestro, who's my best friend, by the way, if anybody knows that. It's a odd couple relationship, but man, we're best friends. And you know, for her, like, people just don't like, they don't even call her by her name. Yeah. They don't even know. That's yeah. all it is, you know, like, they yeah. just, that's what they say. And it's interesting, like, just saying, like, people were like yelling at her, like in New Orleans, like hey, remember my, yeah exactly yeah, yeah, like yeah. like in the French Quarter. And you know, it's just interesting. But she's done such a good job of like, you talk about social media, like, she has a sizable following, much smaller than you guys, but very rabid. Like, I've never, I don't know many people that have a social media following that is as engaged yeah. as hers. I mean, she just does such a good job of engaging with people on a very non-automated way, which is very time consuming. Somehow she fits it all in, and she's just, I mean, it's paying off for her in a lot of ways with career development, but also being able to build a business and move away from, you know, some of the teaching she's been teaching a ton. And all that is just because of this platform that she's developed. And it's kind of crazy if you think about it that you can do that now, but there tends to need to be some sort of like strategy of where you're going to go next. And like, what's the goal that you're moving towards for you guys? What's your goal with the prehab guys? Like, what do you want to do? Is it just digital product stuff? Like, what do you think one thing to be?
The goal is that anytime someone's hurt or anytime someone's searching something about their musculoskeletal health, we are the thing that pops up on Google. That is going to be the ultimate goal. Like, if someone types in something about their knee, someone types in something about their shoulder, we want the information that we're putting on, especially on the blogs, to be the first thing that people get, because we want to know people. We want to let people know that A, they're strong, B, they don't have cancer, and see, here's some things that you can do right now before you see a PT, before you see a chiro, before you see anyone. At least try these things for 2 weeks. Mm. Okay, if it's not getting better, then definitely go see someone and know that you do need to see a healthcare provider. And that's the reason why we go to school for so long, to see us. But for I personally believe for the 80%, 70% of things that I see in the clinic, not the post-op stuff, of course,
yeah,
that people are just in pain, that they can, if they just had some education, it would be so much better off, and they wouldn't have gone down the slippery slope and the spiral. So now I'm seeing them 6 months later in the clinic.
Yeah.
Because they've been reading really bad stuff online.
Oh, and tons of it.
We want to clean up the internet, I guess you can say.
Well, bad information, man. Thing. Well, yeah. They get it lots of ways.
Yeah.
Especially if you go online.
Yeah.
If you have shoulder pain, it's just a matter of time before you get on WebMD and you think you have like lung cancer.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh shit, no, I got lung cancer. Mm-hmm. Better tell my wife. You know, and that always ends in something catastrophic or terrible. And yet we know that if you really look at the pain science of what's happening, these negative sort of like spiraling thoughts, yeah. all it does is just make it even worse, yep. you know, and, yep. and there's the perception of what the pain feels like becomes even that much more, you know, painful yeah. because they're just stressing over and over again about like mm-hmm. what's going on with it. And like, oh, I need surgery or whatever it might be. And there's a lot of bad information out there. I also think we're starting to see the shift in healthcare. It's been going on for a while, but very prevalent now where it's moving to where it's easier for people to have teleconsults, like, right?
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And in a lot of ways, I mean, in some cases, sure, hands-on stuff is very necessary, but oftentimes, like you said, you just move back, you know, yeah. like I can tell people I just teach how to hinge correctly
yeah.
and their back doesn't hurt as yep. much.
Yeah.
I can do that, you know, over Zoom easily.
Yeah.
So, you know, for you guys, like moving that direction, do you feel like, you know, the digital side that you're working on, do you see a brick and mortar, you know, combination in conjunction with this? Like, you know, is it just exclusively digitally? Like, what other things are you guys thinking about potentially getting involved in?
So if we ever were to do a brick and mortar, the purpose of the brick and mortar would be to be a part of the community and to have fun for us.
Yeah.
It would never be to have a brick and mortar to have that be the main source of a business.
Yeah.
Because we know for what we're talking about touching, we know we have more touch points online and we can impact, we think we can have a greater impact through doing things online. So that's going to be always going to be our focus.
Yeah.
The online sphere.
Yeah.
And to what you said before, just teaching someone how to move a little better, giving them that little bit of information can go a long way, especially if you're helping / teaching the student and our coach who has other touch points
right.
with their patients and their clients, then you're having an even greater impact on, you know, society, I guess, at large.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, what about education? So, you know, for you guys in particular, that's what you do now, but it's to the general public. You know, is there interest in doing this also with students and coaches?
Definitely down the road. That's where we want to go. We definitely want to hit that. I mean, we're hitting that now through BFR for sure, but definitely education for students. We're trying to get, we want TheraX education for student curriculum to be a lot better. I know that wasn't something that we got taught in school. That's something that most of students will complain about, and half the problem is just exposure.
Right.
So actually, you just need to be exposed yourself training, and then you need to be exposed in the clinic and seeing, oh, that didn't work.
Right.
And then thinking on the spot. And I think people can get more of that if they were exposed to movements via online, via social media, just people on social media now. I mean, I follow so many accounts. I'm like, well, that's really cool. I haven't thought of that. I may not have the same rationale for whatever the post was, but I'm like, well, that's a good, I like that. And now I can apply that in X, Y, and Z ways in the clinic. So definitely education down the road for sure.
That's cool. I got very little, I guess we definitely had TheraX in school. I'm interested to see with you guys at USC how this was, but I can't say that no one ever took us to the gym. No one ever really took us outside of the confines of the school, and you know, they said like, all right, let's get under some load. I mean, this was just stuff that we were doing anyway. The people that were interested in it were learning about running mechanics on our own. And I see a shift in that. It's starting to happen more. Yeah. It seems like students are being invited back. One of our students, one of our PTs, Robbie, he teaches a like strength and conditioning course for Georgia State now.
Nice.
So he goes back with another student, David Cho, and they teach this course, and it's a couple hours. It's just like a little, you know, elective kind of thing. And the students love it. And it's like, yeah, man, like it's important. And we know that the research also shows that if you're loading a human being, they're more resilient, you know, they're stronger, they live longer, they have more satisfaction because they're able to be more independent. So it's important, but I wonder why the gap is there. Cause like, maybe it's just that professors don't know it, you know, and they're not really practicing themselves.
I think that can maybe holds true in some. I know for at least, I'm thinking about my education SC, there's too much to cover. When you have to think about their education, they have to start on the basics first. They have to start on the table. What's a bridge look like? They're not going in all the details. Oh, you can do one leg. Oh, where's the weight? If it's on the heel or the toe, what's the difference? If my knee goes out further, they're maybe not covering that stuff, which they should, because those same biomechanical principles apply to when you get into higher level stuff too.
Right.
But they have to teach the basic stuff, because at the end of the day, the schools are teaching for the boards. That's why we still have to learn ultrasound for the board. That's and it's unfortunate, but I think students leading the education, because that's happening now. Like students are coming to their professors in their school saying, I want to learn about BFR. I want to learn about strength and conditioning. And even if it's only elective, that's still better than what I had. Not any of that at all.
Yeah.
You know, even if it is a 3-hour course, that's still 3 hours more than, you know, than zero. And it's awesome that students are being able to push for that, you know, for those things.
Yeah.
And I think students should continue to do that.
I think it just starts it with them too. Like for instance, 3 hours might just pique your interest. And then it's like, well, cool, check this stuff out. Or maybe you should go train at this gym. Like, I really feel like one of the best ways to really learn this stuff is actively do it yourself.
Yeah.
You know, 100%. Like, I mean, how you teach somebody to move under load if you've never been under load, or how you teach somebody how to, you know, train kettlebells if you've never trained kettlebells. Like, you know, all these things that you have to get involved in. And also, you know, and I get on my soapbox about this a little bit, and I'm obviously not going to the CrossFit games, but in our profession, I feel like there's a lot of hypocrites in terms of all we really do is tell people to make better health and wellness decisions, move more, get stronger, be more flexible if needed, whatever it is. And yet we have a lot of people that do not practice that themselves, you know, and that's very transparent. People, it would be like going to a personal trainer that's overweight. Yep. That would be hard for you to really take that person seriously, right?
Yeah.
And I think that you obviously can't make that mandatory in our profession, but as a standard, we should be on the tip of the spear, really, you know, leading by example. Yep. And something that also, in my opinion, should be addressed with students in a way that where I don't want to alienate anybody, and people have plenty of, you know, issues of why they may or may not be able to, you know, look a certain way, but for fuck's sake, like, you can't be eating Little Debbie's all day, yeah, telling somebody
to stop eating Little
Debbie's. Yeah, to clean it up.
Yeah.
Because they've got type 2 diabetes. You're like, yep, you're well on your way, man. And it's, you're doing yourself no favors. So, you know, I think there's a lot of that in the profession still to this day, because you and I are in this, what's considered sort of like an outlier performance-based approach. Mm-hmm. Very small sliver of our profession. When I go to physical therapy conferences, I do not feel like I fit in.
Yeah.
I feel out of place. I feel like my mom would fit in better there.
Yeah.
You know, she's a retired occupational therapist.
Yeah.
All her best friends are probably there. My friends are not there. My friends, yeah, are hanging out at CrossFit gyms or, you know, strength and conditioning conferences. And so I wonder though, I think it's just a matter of time before we start to see that sort of subset get bigger and bigger and get represented more. And then people really seeking out, they want to, you know, drive that direction. I, you know, for you being newer into the profession, I'm interested in your thoughts on, like, what have you seen? What are the trends that you've seen kind of change with that?
So we, so like Danny mentioned, I was over here for dinner. We were talking about a little bit of this before, but unless you know that something's a possibility, as it doesn't matter where you are at.
Right.
For me as a student, I didn't know that there was this possibility to work in a gym, to work with an athletic population that's not necessarily like as an athletic trainer, DPT, or
right,
with a college. I didn't know that there was that subset. I didn't know I can work, you know, with weightlifters, with just the healthy population, because I wasn't exposed to that my whole first year at PT school. And it wasn't until I listened to this guy over here, Danny, on, which we've now discovered, on
Jared Carter's podcast. Yeah, my boy. Great podcast,
about,
by the
yeah,
way.
Great, yeah, podcast. Go listen to it. You know, talking about how you're going to all these CrossFit gyms after work, after you're already working your patient care, you know, getting information out, getting within the community, that I was like, oh wow, there's actually something available. And I think now through social media that people have seen, even though it's a select population, they've seen that there are people doing this, and not just doing it, but doing it well,
yeah,
and that it's working.
Yeah.
It opens the doors to saying, okay, just because I might not get that exposure in school or within the, especially in small classes, I was very fortunate at 100 people. SC is a big school, but there are a lot of programs, you know, it could be 20 people.
Sure.
You may not get that. I mean, I didn't get that exposure with 100 people.
Good point.
But now through social media, you can get that exposure and say, okay, it's possible. And now through online, there's so many resources, you know, like yourself, that people can reach out to and say, hey, what are the next steps? Or at least point me in the right direction of what I can educate myself on further.
Yeah.
To keep you motivated, because it's hard when you're in school to stay motivated if you don't have, if you're not surrounded by that. And that's what you know you want to do.
Yeah. It's sort of, you know, I talk about the concept of like, the first person to break the 4-minute mile, like with, they thought this was impossible.
Yeah.
And then the year that happened, I think it was another two or three people broke the record as well, that broke the 4-minute mile, which they thought was impossible. But this, it's this whole idea of like, oh, it can be done, right?
Yeah.
Kind of thing. I you know, we were talking, and I told you the first place I ever saw that was in San Francisco at Kelly's gym, whenever they were in the parking lot. And he had a Connex box that, like, dude, it was probably barely maybe a foot wider on each side on the end of the table, and probably like 2 feet wider on the sides. And he's a big human being. And to watch him like have to like shimmy around,
yeah,
dude, the side of it while somebody was laying down, like he got out of the room as soon as he could, but it had like a little air conditioner on it. So if it was, you know, it was pretty hot when I was there.
Yeah.
So we had the air conditioner running, and this person's like sitting there while he's sort of on this tiny stool talking to him and taking an intake. And I was like, holy crap, this is kind of crazy. Like somebody literally is paying you to sit in this little box and in a parking lot at that. And he had a wait list for like 3 weeks. And that's the first time that I thought, I had no intentions of getting out of the military at all at that time. And I was just there because I wanted to learn some stuff and take it back to my brigade. And, you know, things just changed a little bit over the next few years as I got some opportunities. But I remember thinking like, this is amazing. Yeah. And not only that, but like, man, this is so, like, he has say over who he gets a chance to work with, who he doesn't work with, and he doesn't have to fight with insurance companies, and it's super transparent. And it's like there's just this agreement between you and this person and not any other third party, and it just makes it very streamlined. And, you know, for me, that was like my 4-minute mile. Seeing that was huge. And now I think, you know, people like yourself putting content out and people seeing what a student can do in a non-traditional kind of evolution afterward, mm-hmm. without saying, okay, I'm going to go work for this high network or high volume clinic for a couple of years. Maybe I do a residency. I'm tied to a contract with them for like 3-4 years. Yeah. Maybe I do a fellowship. You know, maybe I become a clinic director. I get paid marginally more. I hate my job significantly more. Yeah. And then from there, I decide like, you know, what do I want to do after that? And for a lot of people, sadly, like they decide, maybe I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
And it's because maybe they haven't seen these other things. Cause like, do you have fun doing what you do?
Oh yeah.
Would you, and you told me you were thinking about initially orthopedic surgery. Yeah. Are you super glad you didn't do that?
I'm super glad I didn't do that. Super, super glad.
Those guys are miserable, man. Like I'm not all of them, but a lot of the surgeons that I know, like they have crazy hours. They don't see their family a whole lot.
Crazy
hours. And the amount of money they make good money, but relative to the flexibility they have in their life is it's not worth the trade. Yeah.
They're never going to be. It's so hard to be an entrepreneur and an orthopedic surgeon.
Right,
you have to be in these, like I said, these conglomerates or be part of these healthcare systems. And at that point, like I know for one of them, I won't mention the name in LA. You sign a paper like if you can create an invention, like a surgical technique, you don't own that surgical technique.
Yeah,
you're employed by them.
Right.
So if you ever want, if you ever wanted to do something, you got to go out on your own and do it, even though you can't be a part of a hospital.
Wow.
And it's so hard to get patients when you're on your own.
Not yeah.
Part of a big system like that.
It's true. It's true. I've seen a trend here even with a couple non-surgical sports med docs that have just gone straight cash. And I send a lot of people to see those guys because our population, obviously, that's something that they, that's the direction they prefer. And they also prefer the speed at which they get to see them. Mm-hmm. The answer that they get, the non-surgical approach, the more concierge level of service. And then a communication back and forth between me and this other doc to where it's very symbiotic. So that, they're getting like really, really high level care when normally they would sort of get lost in this big system of these university systems or big hospitals. And I think it's going to go that direction more and more and more, especially as people get more and more time sensitive. Like just think about all the technological advancements that have happened recently. Everything is about convenience economy.
Yep, and how fast you can get it.
Dude, how quick can I get Uber Eats to get here, right? Like Uber Eats didn't even exist a couple of years ago. And now any restaurant in Atlanta, pretty much, if I want to get food delivered to me, I don't even have to go anywhere. It's just convenience, right? So the more convenient you can be, this is why I think the digital stuff is just, it's going to explode even more over the next few years, is the place to be. Now, that being said, I would love to hear some of the struggles of the digital kind of world, because this is the other thing I get a lot is students reaching out and they're just like, dude, I want to create an ebook and make $1 million. It's going to be awesome. Like, how do I do it? Like, yeah, that'd be great. Why wouldn't everybody do that if that was the case? So tell me, like, what have been some of the lessons you've learned the hard way about digital business?
Digital business. So I would say the first thing about digital business isn't even maybe the business side, it's the infrastructure.
Yeah.
If you don't have the infrastructure on the back end, your business will fail. Every time we've launched our product, a product besides maybe this last one, we've had a huge failure that costs lots and lots of money.
Yeah.
So the first one we launched, our membership, it was auto canceling memberships after a month.
Oh wow.
We lost a couple hundred memberships, and that's recurring revenue.
Yeah, yeah.
The second launch we had, we had certain trial lengths set up, but with the code that people were using, the trial length ended up being a year. So
wow.
Every time you launch digital things, we're not even talking about the product itself. We're just talking about like stuff that we as healthcare practitioners may not have the best knowledge, and goes to your point, like partnering with people that know that stuff to help you with that stuff while you focus on the things that you know, the healthcare side, making the actual product.
Yeah.
And then when it comes to the product, there's so much good information out there nowadays. What's going to cause someone to put down their credit card to buy your thing?
Good point.
When there's so much else out there.
Yeah.
Unless they really like you or they really believe you or, you've done something to make them want to do that, because, in this day and age, there's so much information out there. Yes, we're trying to say that we want to be like the go-to resource, whether it's free, whether it's paid, so that way people know and they trust that they're getting good information. But how do you get to that point? That takes a lot of time, a lot of time.
It takes a ton. You're dead on about the digital infrastructure, though. I mean, I feel like you can test and retest everything, and you're always going to miss something. And it's super frustrating. And sometimes it's the difference between a successful, launch or campaign. And to put it in context, like, imagine working on something for literally months.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, because something isn't connected the right way, you're shit out of luck.
Yep.
That's incredibly frustrating.
Yeah.
And not something that can necessarily happen in a brick and mortar business. And this is, I honestly feel like a brick and mortar business is easier to get started and insulate yourself from significant changes than a digital business. Now, a digital business, you can scale much faster and the reach is much, much bigger, but things can change very quickly and you can be out of business with that. So, you know, there's pros and cons to both. I think it just depends on what you're trying to do and the best fit for you, you know? And so what have you guys found with the digital business side of things? Like, have you partnered with people? Are you just learning as much as you possibly can about it and more delving into that? Like, how are you, I guess, insulating yourself from the business side of digital business? Yeah.
So we started off because there were three of us and we had three times as much time as maybe a single person entrepreneur. So we used to try to do everything ourselves, as in like we launched everything ourselves. We created the website ourselves. Right. We did all the code, like all the stuff that we should never have done, we did, but we wanted to learn. And I think it's important to actually start with it doing yourself.
Sure.
That way, you know what goes into it. You know what you don't know, you know what you do know, and you make mistakes, which are good. But then when you do scale up to something bigger where those mistakes are much more amplified, it pays to pay someone way more money than you think you should pay them.
Yeah.
Because you're used to not paying anything for it, but to then for all those fears to be alleviated. Like right now we have two dedicated website teams, and then I have like a virtual assistant that also helps with website stuff. And it's so nice now knowing that when something's not working, I have to do this slight bit of research to know who to send it to. And then I'm going to send it to them, and I don't care how much it costs, because I know that they're much better at it than me spending 5 hours going on Google Forms, trying to figure out how to fix a bug and just being so frustrated. So outsourcing or paying people that excel in something to help you out, just like people pay us in the clinic, we excel in telling them what's wrong, maybe what's wrong with their shoulder and giving them the right path to get back to CrossFit. The same way we should go pace for someone else to go help us with those things that we're not experts in. And we have to suck it up as hard as an entrepreneur because you want to do all those things.
Right.
It's really, really hard to let go. Like that's my for sure, of the three of us, that's my problem. Letting go of responsibilities and being comfortable with someone else doing it, knowing that I'm not in control.
Yeah.
But it's so important to be able to learn how to give someone else control.
Well, it's these like perfectionist tendencies.
Yeah.
You know, a good friend of mine has gone through the same struggle, man. And, you know, he's tapped out in terms of his ability to leverage his time. So he doesn't have any time left. And it's been very difficult for him to let go of control. I think that's really what it comes down to. Yeah. It's like you have these really high standards and you know, to some degree, it's not going to be done exactly as good as you could do it if you were the one doing everything, but it may be way faster and 95% is good and you don't have to do it. I'll take that. Yeah. Like that's a good trade, you know? And I think that's a difficult thing to come to. Here's what I want to leave this with. I think this has been a super cool conversation. I'm excited for everybody to hear this, but I think your message in particular resonates with probably a lot of students that are in school and they're just like, man, I know I want to do something on my own. Like they're sort of in the slow process where they've got to graduate and they've got to get their degree and, you know, and pass boards and all these things, then they can kind of get into everything they want to do. And what advice do you have for like students or even new PTs in terms of, you know, being able to forge their own path and do the thing that they really feel like they're called to do instead of what the status quo of the profession tells everybody to do?
I say 100% no, it's possible. Even if it hasn't been done or you haven't seen someone else do it, you know, start it on your own. What's really cool about the clinic that I work at is they have these things called passion projects. So if you're doing something that you enjoy and they give people time. So someone wants to work with amputees, and everyone has their own little niche. Follow whatever your passion is. And you can still work. Say you have to work that job because you need the money to pay off loans. That's fine. But all the other times of your day, that's only 8 hours every day. Say you're doing documentation, nine and a half. You still have, like Gary Vee would say, you still have a shit ton of time to go do other stuff and follow your passions and go find those things on your own. Seek out people that are going to help you do those things. Because the world's our oyster. Like all that stuff's possible. Just because it hasn't been done before, it doesn't mean it's not. Yeah, it gives you a roadmap if it has been done.
Mm-hmm.
But don't take no for an answer for anyone. And don't let yourself fall into this hole of just wake up, go to sleep, wake up, go to sleep. Doing the same thing without hope. Unless waking up and going to sleep doing the thing you really, really enjoy. And that's totally fine too.
Yeah.
It's totally, totally fine.
Yeah, not everybody's like us. We're weird, man.
That's totally fine.
Like I think we have some sort of weird disease. It's like some sort of strange genetic mutation of some sort that's just like it's not normal to want to put yourself at risk to put honestly like your family's financial future at risk in some cases. We're very just like dumb to that, you know, like I definitely am. And I'm more aware of it now, but early on, it's just like, yeah, sure, that sounds like a good idea. Let's do that. But it's not normal. It's not what everybody's like. So, but whoever's listening to this podcast probably is like us. Mm-hmm. And that's also important to know too, is like, you're not the only person that sees the world this way, that sees opportunity and gets frustrated by people that can't see the same thing that you do.
Yeah.
That's okay. You just have this sort of like unique skill set that maybe you haven't had a chance to actually utilize yet. And being frustrated is normal. But there's options, especially when you get out of school. I mean, you know, you and I have different paths, but yet here we are talking about entrepreneurship in different roles in some capacity, but there's still so much overlap in terms of what you still need to be able to do or not do. And as a student, like, it's easy to get frustrated and just, man, give up and then just like take that crappy job that you know you don't want. Mm-hmm. And I think it's happening less and less now. People aren't scared to kind of do some of these other things. It's cool. So I appreciate the message that you have for everybody that's in school or a new grad. It's cool to hear what you're doing, man. It's finally get a chance to catch up. Yeah. So here's what we'll do. You know, Mike, I'm super excited to get your information exposed to everybody tomorrow. We got 3 cookies to eat. So we'll do that. And then we'll call it a night. So guys, I hope you like this one. Thank you so much for your time, man. Coming over for dinner and eating some tacos with us. And guys, if you like this one, let me know. Take a screenshot of this. Throw it up on your Instagram stories. Tag us. Tag Prehab Guys. And let us know that you like it. We'll repost it. And you guys will hopefully get a little bump in your followers as well. So people know what you're listening to. So as always, guys, thanks so much for listening. We'll catch you next time. You want more cash PT biz help? If so, go get a copy of my book, Fuck Insurance. It's your playbook to successful performance PT practice and never having to deal with insurance again. You can get a free copy at finsurancebook.com. That's finsurancebook.com. Inside this book, you'll learn the direct techniques that we have used to become one of the fastest 100% cash PT practices in the country.